Off the boards, he gets in front of Badan, cutting toward the net, let a backhander go. Stopped there by Markstrom. Rebound with a backhand by Lowry. That stopped. Lowry, the wraparound attempt, he scores! Adam Lowry! At one side, he was stopped. Picked it up and wrapped it around with a backhand on the other.
And the Jets will get it out towards center ice. Here's Armia dashing across the line. Inside out, Bozic shoots, scores! What a great goal by Joel Armia, his second of the night.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you. We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. Adam Lowry re-signed. He was a restricted free agent. Joel Armia re-signed. He, too, was a restricted free agent. I say good morning to my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezzy, two signings for the Winnipeg Jets as they take care of two more of the litany of restricted free agents they had entering this offseason. Joel Armia gets a two-year contract. It is worth $925,000 per season. Adam Lowry gets another two-year contract that's worth $1.125 million per season.
No small talk before we get right into the signings?
We can do small talk in the midst of the signings. I'm always happy to do small talk with you.
I just wanted to know how your Friday night was.
Friday night was good.
How your work week was.
Work week was good. Did a little barbecuing on Friday night. Had a nice, relaxing... I was at the Bomber game with the wife on Thursday, and that was a bit of a later night.
I was telling you, I actually was going to ask you to go to the Bombers game.
Yeah.
Because,
but
of course,
then, of
we
course,
used to
the
be...
The restraining order that I have, you know, prevents you from doing that at that in time, you know.
For those who don't know, we used to be season ticket buddies for a couple of years.
It's true.
Then we decided, I don't know, why did we decide not to renew?
I think I said, I'm never going to another game with you, so help me God.
That's not why. We had a good time. But anyways, I watched it on TV. It was an unfortunate event. I had a pretty decent week at work.
Yeah, good.
It was,
I'm glad.
You know, the weather was a little poor early in the week, and then it got better. Yesterday was beautiful.
I follow you on Instagram, and you posted a picture outside your office. Was there a duck walking down the street or something?
There was a duck.
Like a mallard.
I'm not sure what the difference between a duck and a mallard is, Drew, but it was a duck,
okay.
And the duck's name was Mr. Huey.
You named the duck?
If you look on the Winnipeg Free Press website, you can find an article about this guy. There's a guy that walks around downtown that has a pet duck.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not you?
It's not me.
Huh.
Well, I would think it would be a little bit weird to have a duck as a pet.
Sure.
I mean, considering that you can get it as a entree at many fine restaurants in Winnipeg.
True.
But it was definitely a friendly duck.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So I met Mr. Huey yesterday.
That's nice.
Do
you think Mr. Huey's now talking to his duck friends saying that he met Ezra yesterday?
No, like Donald. And
yeah, Donald and I don't know. There's Huey, Dewey, and Louie, so I guess.
Paul Kariya, Timu Solani. The ducks.
Ah, clever. I was wondering where you're going with that one. Goldberg, if you want to really extend to the movie. Yeah, exactly. Anyways, let's talk about Lowry and Armia now that we've...
Maybe we shouldn't have done any small talk.
Yeah, it's, you know, really, it's just straight downhill at that point in time. But Lowry and Armia, I mentioned it, Ezzy. We'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets moves this week. Both those guys get two-year contracts. No real surprise that, you know, that the signings occurred. Nothing really significant money-wise here. They're both younger players who, I mean, Adam Lowry certainly didn't have as good of a year as he did in his first season with the Winnipeg Jets. They're both young guys. They both sort of, this is a bridge contract, if you will. You know, prove to me more what you have, and then we'll talk about a larger contract after that.
Yeah, Drew, the only thing that is really surprising, or not really surprising, but maybe mildly surprising about the Adam Lowry contract is that maybe he didn't get more years. And I didn't expect him to get 6 or 7 years, but I thought maybe he'd get 3 or 4 years, and then you're starting to get closer into your unrestricted free agency, right?
Sure.
So it's two contracts that we knew that were going to be signed. We know that Jacob Trouba is probably going to be the most contentious of all the RFAs. The Jets only have three remaining RFAs now. JC Lapon, and then Brandon Tanev is the other one.
Yeah.
But yeah, you mentioned, you know, Adam Lowry's point totals went down a little bit from 23 to 17. Joel Armia, to me, is a more interesting case as far as where he fits in. And Adam Lowry has kind of been a staple there on the third line at center. But when you look at who the Jets have coming in, and that's not just the young guns, Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor, it's Sean Mathias as well, mm-hmm. who can play center. Adam Lowry and Joel Armia, there's a good possibility, Drew, and this is nothing against these players, there's a good possibility these guys are on the fourth line next year. And Adam Lowry, I don't think, should take that as a demotion, because this is going to be one of the best young up-and-coming teams in the NHL. And when you throw in not only Sean Mathias and some of the other players that are going to be competing for NHL spots that played for the Moose last year or played junior last year. So mm-hmm. Brendan Lemieux is another guy.
Sure.
J.C. LaPone is another guy that's going to be battling for that fourth line spot. Not saying that J.C. LaPone is going to take Adam Lowry's job. Just saying that this year they're going to have a lot more competition for those spots.
Well, that's just it. And we've talked about that really throughout the off season since we, you know, particularly since, you know, Patrick Laine, you know, the Jets won the lottery or finished second in the lottery, and you knew that the guy was going to break right into the league, is that the team is going to be, positions aren't going to be guaranteed for players as they have been for much of the last 5 years. A guy who played, you know, 80 games 2 years ago and 74 games last year, like Adam Lowry, would have been guaranteed a spot, be it on the third line or, you know, the fourth line. This year, he's going to have to come to training camp. I'd be surprised if he didn't make the team, but he did spend some time last year with the Manitoba Moose, a brief period of time after he was struggling sort of at the outset of the season.
Yeah, Drew, it was just four games, and that was really just to get Adam Lowry's game back on track. But I agree with you. I mean,
but it's the same sort of idea. I mean, except that he, you know, he's on a one-way contract now, so that obviously that factor, you know, will impact the ability to go down to the Manitoba Moose. I wouldn't expect he would be able to clear waivers or anything. Same with Joel Armia. They're both on one-way contracts. Yes. Are you surprised that all the, you know, that Armia in particular got a one-way contract as opposed to a two-way contract? He doesn't have the NHL pedigree that Adam Lowry has. I mean, really, he had 43 games last season. That was the most games he's ever played in the NHL. I mean, other than that, he'd only played one previous NHL game prior to last season.
No, Drew, not surprised at all. I think in half of a season, Joel Armia proved that he has a place on this team. And as you mentioned, heading into the season, he had not played more than, I think it was,
one game.
No, yeah,
one game for Buffalo.
I was going to say 10 games, but it was less than that. Mm-hmm. So Joel Armia this year, I think, proved that he has a spot on this team. And we saw it towards the end of the season. He scored some highlight reel goals. But this is a guy,
the
too.
The one we played off the top of the show.
Right. And this is a guy that is a two-way forward, I think, in the NHL. I don't think Joel Armia, and sure, he's still young at 23 years old, but I don't think this is a top six guy. I think Joel Armia, you're looking at a guy who's a third line, two-way forward, and similar to Adam Lowry, actually. And even though this signing, Drew, isn't as big as the Mark Scheifele signing, I mean, these are important signings. These guys, even though they've just received, as you mentioned, one-way contracts, these guys have a lot to prove. There's a lot of young players that are more than willing to come in and take these guys' spots. So you're talking about Nick Petan. We mentioned a guy like Brendan Lemieux.
Mm-hmm.
These are guys that are most likely going to come in and play on the fourth or third lines, exactly where these guys are. But you also have Sean Mathias coming in. You have Marco Dano, who just came in for about 20 games for the Jets last year, but he's another guy that's most likely going to be competing for one of those third-line spots. So these are important signings. These are depth signings. We know that who the top six are going to be.
Sure.
And
have a pretty good idea who the top nine are going to, that, you know, right, that the guy like Sean Mathias is going to be in your top nine.
And when I'm looking at the top six and top nine, you know, a player that just recently signed a four-year contract, to me, that is probably the most interesting, is Matthew Perreault. Are you going to move Matthew Perreault back to his center position maybe, and then move Adam Lowry to the left side on that third line?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you use Sean Mathias on that third line, and then you bump Adam Lowry down to the fourth line. And these are all good problems, but I think this is a very important year for Adam Lowry to reestablish himself, because when he came into the NHL in 2014-15, he was kind of given that third line center role, and he earned it.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say he was given it. I mean, he did earn it. I'm a big Adam Lowry fan, as you know, Drew. And, you know, you mentioned that his offensive numbers, you know, took a hit last year. Well, most players on the Winnipeg Jets, their offensive numbers took a hit.
And
the exception of Scheifele and Wheeler,
sure,
most guys didn't have very good years.
And truthfully, Adam Lowry was 6 points fewer than in his rookie year with the Winnipeg Jets. So it wasn't the offensive production that was so significant. I thought just he wasn't the when he broke into the NHL in that first year, he was sort of, he seemed like a player who was wise beyond his years.
Right. No, but you're right, though. Adam Lowry has to be more of a power forward because he doesn't have that finish mm-hmm. that some other players have. He's going to have to play physical. He's going to have to get into the corner, cycle the puck, do whatever you have to do to have an impact on the game. He's not going to be a guy that's going to play on the power play, Drew, right? He'll play on the penalty kill, but he's not going to play on the power play. So he has to be more responsible, and whether that's center or that's on the left side, it applies. And for Joel Armia, he's another guy that I don't think we've only scratched the surface of what we've seen with Joel Armia. As you mentioned, you know, he's 23 years old, but he's only played 44 NHL games now. Sure. So, I mean,
you know, with all due respect to your opinion there, I think at some point in time, I don't think Joel Armia is ever going to, you know, he was drafted 16th overall in the first round by Buffalo. I don't think he's ever
going to be matter at this point.
Right. We're in agreement like that. I don't think that he's ever going to prove to be a, you know, a bona fide first round pick with a dominant offensive skill, which is, I think, what you were saying before, is that it seems at this point in his career, he's going to be better suited to play in your bottom six, maybe, you know, chip in some offensive, because he's got some offensive talent, but it's not overwhelming. And if he can prove that he's, you know, responsible both on the defensive side of the ice, that might be the niche role he carves out for himself.
Andrew, that's why I think you're going to see a rotating cast, or you're going to see a mixture of players on the third line, because we know that the Jets are going to want a solid third scoring line. Mm-hmm. The Jets are going to roll three scoring lines. This is a team that's built around speed and scoring right now. So you're going to see Sean Mathias, Marco Dano, Joel Armia, Adam Lowry, maybe Matthew Perreault. These players, whoever really clicks as a third line in training camp and at the early part of the season, that's going to be your third line. And then the players that aren't adding that scoring element, mm-hmm. so whether that's Adam Lowry, Joel Armia, Marco Dano, that's going to be your fourth line. And, you know, we expect guys like Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn to be staples on that fourth line. Maybe Brendan Lemieux makes the team as the extra forward. He plays on the fourth line. But needless to say, Joel Armia and Adam Lowry are those depth guys that are went now with new players coming in, with Patrick Laine coming in, Kyle Connor coming in, they're going to have to now kind of carve out a new role. And that's not a bad thing. You look at a guy like Marcus Kruger on Chicago, he's been a fourth-line center year after year. He's got two Stanley Cups. So being a fourth-line center on a good team is not a bad thing.
Well, and that's, you know, goes back to the point. You know, I think Paul Maurice is probably looking at his bottom six and he's saying, I'm just going to ride the hot hand. You know, I don't really care if Joel Armia is, you know, when Joel Armia is going well, he'll be the third line. He'll be on the third line. When Marco Dano's going well, you know, he'll be on the third line. And then when not, he'll be on the fourth line. And maybe he'll have to sit a couple games in the press box. It's just about the internal competition that having a guy like Kyle Connor coming into your team, having a guy like Patrick Laine coming into your team, signing Sean Mathias, bringing these guys on board pushes everybody else down and says, you have to prove it. You have to prove it night after night. You're not going to be handed anything anymore. And it's also guys, you know, Brendan Lemieux. You think Brendan Lemieux wants to go play in Manitoba with the Moose anymore? He doesn't. Brendan Lemieux knows that he's going to have to be absolutely going almost night in and night out because he has that two-way flexibility that Armia and Lowry don't have.
Right, and another thing to mention about Armia and Lowry, we know how physical Lowry is, 6'5". Mm-hmm. He can mix it up with the best of them. You know, Joel Armia is not a small guy at 6'3". He can mix it up as well, too. He's not as physical as Adam Lowry, but Joel Armia is a guy that's not afraid to go into the corners and play that physical style game. So I think those signings are important, Drew, because when you look at the players that are coming in, not just Patrick Laine, not just Kyle Connor, but Matthew Perreault, Mark Scheifele down the middle, the Jets are not the most physical team. Sure, they've got Chris Thorburn and they've got Dustin Byfuglien on the back end, but these guys also, I think, add a certain physical element to this team that's important.
And if you're going to do a top six for top nine based on speed and skill, and then you're going to have some complementary players who are going to go in there and be your muckers, for lack of a better word, who are going to go into the dirty areas and they're going to go and be physical, I think the Jets are probably pretty okay with that combination of speed, skill, and some physicality.
Truculence.
There you go, Brian Burke. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. We're going to talk about the inaugural Winnipeg Jets Hall of Fame class. We'll talk about the Jets offseason in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Sports Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg are with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Winnipeg Free Press, he's a Winnipeg Jets reporter, Tim Campbell. Tim, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Doing very well, Tim. How's the golf game this summer?
It has been infrequent but enjoyable.
There you go. Infrequent but enjoyable is almost the best way to get out on the golf course. Tim, appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. Thought we'd talk a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets off season, but before we talk about the current Winnipeg Jets, a big sort of monumental announcement yesterday with the inaugural Winnipeg Jets hockey or Winnipeg Jets Hall of Fame class, the announcement that the hotline of Hedberg, Nielsen, and Hull going to be inducted during that Heritage Classic week here in Winnipeg. You know, your thoughts, Tim, you know, is this, are you surprised at all that they decided to go with the entirety of the line as opposed to an individual, say Bobby Hull, given his, you know, litany of, you know, Mr. Jeff Bobby Hull sort of thing?
No, I think they belong together. And, you know, I think it's a really good first step because it makes a bigger splash when you have all three of them. You know, they're forever linked. Their time here together wasn't that long, but it was so impactful. I just think, you know, if you're going to start something up, and especially with the big week that the Heritage Classic is going to be, I think this is the right move for this particular instance, that the three of them should sort of stick together. And I think it's just a really good way to kick off something that's going to be probably pretty integral to the Jets and the community, the hockey think in the community here going forward. I mean, you know, there are a number of great candidates. We can look ahead to the future and already pick out a number of great candidates that probably aren't long for induction. So I think just to get the ball rolling, this is a really good way to do it.
Tim, a lot of Jets fans, both old and new, have heard of the hotline and the fact that the Winnipeg Jets won the Avco Cups in the 1970s. But many Jets fans, particularly younger Jets fans, don't really understand how dominant the Anders Hedberg, Ulf Nielsen, Bobby Hull line was, especially when they were winning those Avco Cups in the late 1970s and what they were doing at the international level. Can you talk about that line and how it really transformed the WHA and really led the way for more European players to come into the NHL?
Well, it did, and you're right about the impact, and it's probably lost on a lot of folks. And I think, you know, that'll probably be the case a little bit more as time goes by, because every year we get a little farther away from it. You know, that era of the Jets certainly even predates me. I didn't move to Winnipeg until the late 1980s. So, you know, and that's 10 to 15 years removed from when I even showed up around here. So, but that, you know, it's funny. That's one of the things when I did arrive in Winnipeg and start to cover hockey here, that, you know, meeting a lot of people that I did sort of knew in the community, but the impact and the fondness of the memories. I mean, and this has carried through for all of my years in Winnipeg, the fondness of folks that actually attended games and followed the team back in those days had and still have for the WHA Jets, and, you know, in particular the Stars of that era. So, I mean, that's a personal anecdote for you know, for how important it was and continues to be. This week, well, yesterday in particular, just trying to do a bit of the homework and able to help me with my stories and material yesterday, just when you look at it again, when review those years and the numbers, the crazy numbers that those guys, and it wasn't just the three of them, but they were the stars and the superstars that highlighted the era. I mean, look at the crazy numbers that mm-hmm. they put up. If you want an exercise where you need something uplifting, or you want to be positive, just go into any of the hockey databases and look up the team stats and those individual stats for me. I mean, Bobby Hull, you know, 77 goals in one year. I mean, we know he can score goals. He always scored goals. mean, he had, I think, 550-goal seasons in the NHL. But holy cow, I mean, the dominance of those three, especially right out of the gate. I mean, Ulf and Anders came here, and one had 120 points right out of the gate, and the other one had 100, and Bobby was scoring goals like there was no tomorrow. So it was something special in all of, you know, North American or Winnipeg hockey history that, you know, combo could do what it wanted. And I can just only imagine, I mean, sitting here all these years after, can only imagine the kind of joy that would have been in that Winnipeg arena on so many nights where they would fill the net and dazzle around and make opponents, I'm sure, look foolish, and a lot of goalies look foolish. You know, just reviewing those numbers yesterday really made me stop and think, like, okay, we know they were good, but these numbers are crazy. And it wasn't just one year. You know, the 4 years that they were together was a very, very special time in Winnipeg. There can never be any doubt about that.
Tim, actually, the last year that Ulf Nielsen and Anders Hedberg played in the WHA, 1977-78, the hotline, the three members of the hotline, Hull, Nielsen, and Hedberg, combined for 365 points.
That is kind of sick by today's standard, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you don't get a guy getting 100 points in today's standards. And, you know, to your point, Tim, about sort of, you know, maybe the, you know, you can tell somebody's age, because if you ask sort of people, you know, a younger generation, what's the most goals ever scored by a Winnipeg hockey player, they would say 76 by Timu in the
right.
Rookie year. And then if you ask, you know, somebody a little bit on the older side of things, they might say 77 by Hull. So it's a good way to compare and contrast the different generations of, you know, WHA versus the NHL and that sort of thing.
That's a good test. I'm going to remember that. Thanks for bringing that up.
You can feel free to use it as long as you give me a little bit of credit.
Absolutely.
Tim Campbell's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Tim, moving away from the old, you know, the announcement on the Hall of Fame to the current Winnipeg Jets roster, the 2.0 version, if you will. The big signing so far this offseason, Mark Scheifele gets the big 8-year contract, you know, $49 million. Average annual value of just over $6.1 million. You know, the numbers, I think, you know, most people are pretty fair, pretty decent. Is this a, you know, the rare $49 million contract that you can foresee a player, you know, outperforming?
Well, I could see it in this case, given the time frame of this contract. I mean, there's a lot, you know, this is the maximum term that's allowed under the CBA, and these 8-year deals are allowed only for a team's own free agents. You can't go out in the market in July 1st and sign someone who's gone to market to an 8-year deal. This is a special provision that the Players Association kind of won in the last round of negotiations, that, you know, you can extend an eight-year deal to one of your own. So Mark and his camp have clearly taken advantage of this provision. It's something I'm sure they were happy to have, and it looks to me like the Jets were happy to give it. You know, the deal buys 4 UFA years. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but
that's
I think
correct.
It buys 4 UFA years or potential UFA years for Mark Scheifele, so that, you know, if he wanted to play the letter of contracts by the law, he could become a unrestricted free agent in 4 more years. So the Jets have got him 4 years beyond that locked up, and there's always a price for that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of a premium of the salary. So, I mean, it's spread out over the entire contract. It might look a little heavy at the start here, and not that much heavy considering what today's scoring standards, you know, equaling dollars are. But I think this is going to turn out to be a really good deal in a lot of ways. I mean, if in fact the cap will get rising again, or rising legitimately again, if the business of the NHL continues to improve, and it has improved quite a lot in the last number of years, but if things are kind of flat right now, but this is going to be a good deal in 3 or 4 or 5 years if the cap's going up, and also if Mark is, you know, continues his growth. But he's shown in his first 3 full-time NHL years that he's a player like a sponge, and it hasn't been exactly a straight line, but I think the last bunch of games in the 2015-2016 season illustrate, you know, maybe what he's capable of. You think about what he was able to accomplish. I know it's a bit of a short snapshot, and I'm always leery of these short samples, but with Brian Little out of the lineup, I mean, so much of the attention from opponents went to him in the late going, and yet he produced down the stretch. Yes, the Jets were out of the playoffs, and I suppose there would be a few teams that might have taken them lightly. But that said, the focus and the pressure of opponents would have been on him pretty much alone offensively, and yet he was the highest goal-scoring player and the highest points-producing player from February 18th to the end of the regular season. Not Patrick Kane or anyone else in the NHL produced more than Mark Scheifele in that period. Not Sidney Crosby, nobody. So it's not a whole season of a sample where you could really say that, but it's long enough to know that Mark Scheifele, I don't think anymore, is what some people might think a flash in the pan. I think we've seen his growth continue. I doubt very much if it'll be a straight line in the next bunch of years either. Probably there will be some lean times and some slumps, but I think he's a guy that plays, he has a lot of skill, but he seems to me to be a guy who's able to play this game with his brain as well. And as we go forward here, I think in the last number of years, and in particular going forward here with the pace of games and quickness of games, I think Hockey Sense is going to continue to be an increasing quality that teams are looking for. If you don't have Hockey Sense these days with the pace of games, you're going to be sunk in so many ways. So it's a good signing all the way around. I would hope Jets fans would be optimistic about what the deal suggests, that A, the Jets have been able to get their business done, B, Scheifele's happy and you want to keep your players happy when you can, and see, like, as an overall picture with the team, this is kind of what the Jets are trying to be: younger and better in terms of skill and speed and all those playing qualities. I don't really see too much bad in this deal.
Tim, is there anything new on the Jacob Trouba contract front? And if the Jets do decide to move him, do you think there's got to be a left-shooting defenseman coming back the other way?
Well, you would suspect that would be their preference. But just how many quality left shooting defensemen are available these days, that aren't 33 or that sort of things. I'm not sure how many line up in the ideal category where you could just say, oh, that's an easy deal to make. So, I mean, always today, especially the bigger trades, they're difficult to make because of contracts and contract provisions. And it's not just about salary all the time, often term and no trade clauses and bonuses, all these things come into play. And a manager's job is so much more difficult these days. I don't have any real new information about what the Jacob Trouba situation is. All you can do is try to read into what has happened. And to this date, what has happened is he hasn't signed. But there's still a fair bit of time left here in the off season. What are we, about 6 weeks from the start of World Cup training camps, and about 3 months still before the first game of the regular season. It's just a little short of 3 months away. So time is still an ally, I guess, for both sides. And it looks to me, and I don't know this from anyone telling me, but it looks to me like Trouba's camp simply wants to wait some more time and see what some of the other contracts fall like. I don't think so far some of the comparables have fallen that are going to make Jacob Trouba do cartwheels. I mean, I wouldn't say contracts for people like Seth Jones are bad, and they're certainly not poor, but I think in the $5 million range from some of the things we hear might be disappointing for Trouba. I don't know if he's realistic to expect a lot more than that, but he hasn't signed yet. There are ample comparables out there to him. But there are still a few more to be signed. I think they're probably waiting to see what Lindholm and Anaheim gets. That may be a key one going forward here, and we'll just have to wait and see. I don't envision this coming to pass anytime soon, although underestimating Kevin Cheveldayoff when it comes to getting business done, I think is probably not wise. I can't say he's gotten every deal done, because we waited a long time for Ladd and Bufflin results last year, but there have been instances. I recall a couple years ago when they got Bogosian and Wheeler and Little settled during the summer. It didn't seem to me like there was a lot of panic and or stress from the Jets. They just got the business done, and it looks like they're getting a lot of business done this summer so far. So I just see this going on a little longer because it can.
Tim, we'll let you go on this last question. With all the additions to the roster, you know, Kyle Connor leaving college, Patrick Laine getting drafted second overall, the signing of Sean Mathias, there's way more competition, especially among the Jets' forward spots as we head into training camp in about, you know, 8 weeks' time, give or take. You know, is that the most interesting dynamic you're sort of going to be keeping an eye on in training camp, is the competition for those bottom six spots that there's where there's really hasn't been competition the past 5 years?
Well, I wouldn't say there hasn't been any competition, because I thought last year's training camp was getting to where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. It's an intriguing, the options are intriguing now, because it seems to me there are so many of them, and I don't really have a good feel quite yet of who's got any inside track or how it may fall out. I think performances in training camp are going to be everything. Like, so that then in turn translates to, well, who trained the best in the summer? Who's the most prepared? And these are things there's no way to know until the guys get on the ice in September. So apart from, I mean, one of the things I expect out of training camp, there will be somebody watching practice that will probably start keeping track of the three goalies' save percentage in practice so that we can, you know, so we can jump to so many conclusions about how the goaltending thing will shake out. But after the goaltending question, yeah, I think this depth and the other lines and how will the 10 guys for three spots equation or thereabouts, how will that shake out? I do find it interesting. Obviously the draft and develop model, will be in the spotlight and come to the forefront just a little bit more again this fall. And it's something worth watching because, you know, there are some good young prospects who are in various states of readiness and various volumes of knocking on the door. You know, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, actually. It was interesting about Nick Petan, and mm-hmm. and the response was kind of doubting Nick Petan. And I said, well, what reason would you have? This is just an example of how some of these conversations are going to go. But what, you know, my response was, well, what reason would you have to doubt Nick Petan come this September? What has he done in his last two training camps? When he was still a junior, he came within a whisker of making the lineup. I mean, he was the last cut 2 years ago. And then last year, he got even better, and he actually made the team out of training camp. So what reason would you have to doubt Nick Petan this fall? And why would you think he wouldn't continue to get better? And, you know, so that's just the point. And that doesn't mean Nick Petan's on the team, but, I mean, he's a guy that's on an up curve, sure, developing very well. He's got a lot of hockey sense. All these things fit with what the Jets are trying to do, but, you know, he's up against 7 or 8 or 9 guys who have other assets or similar assets who are also on up curves and are fairly young. And that's what's going to make it fun to watch and really interesting. And I think that's one of the sources for some of the increasing optimism around this team. I think you guys would agree with that.
Oh, we would certainly agree with that. It will make for a pretty fascinating training camp and remainder of the offseason as we see how the Jacob Trouba negotiation plays out. Tim, really appreciate your time and analysis this morning. Thanks very much for doing this.
No problem, guys. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Likewise, Tim. Take care. Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at some signings and some unsigned free agents still available. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Twenty minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment sponsored by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced earlier this week, a couple days ago, another concert series event at Rumors. Tom Green returns to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club September 22nd through 24th. A concert Series event. Tickets the last couple times Tom Green was in town went very quickly, complete sellouts. So get on it real quick. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Purchase your tickets to see Tom Green September 22nd through 24th at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
I'd never sell out, Drew.
We'll leave that for now until later. We'll talk about... I'm pretty sure you would be willing to sell out to some degree.
Never.
Never. Okay, it's a clear no.
Never sell out from a legal curve.
Okay, not like that other guy?
And let me tell you...
Not like that other guy who used to sit in this room with us?
No, that's not fair.
I know. And I'm obviously joking when I say things like that.
I was actually thinking about this this morning driving to the studio. Like, it's been over a month since Richie's been on the show. So it's pretty... It's pretty crazy how time flies.
Yeah, you and I haven't killed each other.
Well, you would know, Drew, you're 75.
That's true. You and I haven't killed each other in a month. That's somewhat impressive. It's fortuitous timing. In about 20 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News. And we're going to talk
By the way, how late did that Jamie Benn signing break? Whoa. That was like at 7 or 8 o'clock at night.
Seriously, usually Friday nights, Friday end of day is sort of a bad news time.
Usually at like 2 or 3, most news is done.
Well, the reason why they announced it yesterday is I think there was a Stars Fan Fest event or something going on. Yep. In Dallas, or I think it's Stars in the Park or whatever they call it there in Dallas. So that was the big announcement for the event, was the Jamie Benn signing. So as I was saying, it was fortuitous. We were going to have Mike Hyka on, and we are going to have Mike Hyka on. We're just going to talk about the Dallas offseason and things of that nature.
Dan Hamhuis signing,
yep. Exactly. Their goaltending situation. Then the news breaks that Jamie Benn has re-signed with the Dallas Stars. It's an 8-year contract. It's $76 million. An average annual value of $9.5 million. It'll start after this coming year. So it starts after the 2016-17 season, because he still has 1 year left on his existing contract. $9.5 million. He's going to be one of the highest paid players in the entire NHL. Hard to say he doesn't deserve it. This is a guy who certainly, has been he's over a point a game player. He's turned into be one of the best young forwards in the game. I mean, when you get more than a point a game, when you're 27 years old, you're in the prime of your hockey, you get a $9.5 million a year contract.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago was his real breakout year, Drew, when he won the Art Ross Trophy, leading the NHL in points. And then last year, he was top three in the NHL in scoring again with 89 points. Tyler Seguin would have been right up there with him if he wasn't injured for the last part of the season. But you're right, Jamie Benn has turned into a premier forward. Mm-hmm. And I would even go back to the 2014 Olympics. You remember he scored that goal in the gold medal game. That was really, I think, him really truly establishing himself as an elite forward. We always knew that Jamie Benn was a good forward. Certainly for the last 5 or so years, we've known that Jamie Benn is a really good forward. And he's really taken that next step. And you mentioned, you forget that he's only 26 years old and he has 1 year left on his current contract. And it makes a lot of sense that Jim Nill wants to get this contract extension done now, Drew. You don't want this to become a distraction throughout the season. There's no real reason not to sign him now. I mean, the Dallas Stars know that Jamie Benn is an elite forward.
Yeah.
They know that they want him and Tyler Seguin to be the core of this team, along with other players. I mean, John Klingberg is now part of that core and other guys. But certainly Benn and Seguin, those are your top two forwards, and there's no reason why you wouldn't lock him up for the max 8-year deal, right? So he deserves to be paid. I've always been a huge Jamie Benn fan.
Captain of the franchise, face of the franchise, everything you would want in a player, Jamie Benn possesses.
I really think that this Dallas Stars team, the best is yet to come, and we're going to talk to Mike Hyka in about 20 minutes or so, but I think that they're one defenseman short and probably a goaltender short right now from being a real elite team. But when you throw in Jason Spezza in there, and they've brought in Patrick Sharp, and John Klingberg has really emerged as a puck-moving defenseman, I mean, they're very close. And you saw that last year in the playoffs. They're still a ways away from – they're a good regular season team. They won the division.
They need goaltending.
Well, the goaltending wasn't good.
Yeah.
Niemi and Lehtinen didn't get the job done in the playoffs.
Right.
And it looks like they're going to go with them again next year unless something drastic happens. I know, Drew, that a lot of people are expecting Jim Nill to go out and get a Ben Bishop or a Marc-Andre Fleury, but he probably would have done it if he was going to do it. Not to say that he still can't acquire a goaltender, but looks like Lehtinen and Niemi are his guys again. And it might be a situation where they go with these guys for one more year, see what they can do. Similar kind of the St. Louis Blues did with Brian Elliott.
Yeah, the problem with it, though, is that they have, both those guys are still under contract for two more seasons. So it'd be 1 year, you know.
But you can expose one of those guys in the expansion draft.
Fair enough. You can expose, but I don't think either of those guys would be taken in the expansion draft with their, you know, they're older, given that they'd each be about 33 years old. They have a hefty price tag attached to them. I don't know that, you know, for an expansion team, I don't know if you want the backbone of your expansion team to be Lehtinen or Niemi or, you know, Pavlik.
Right.
You want to look at a Winnipeg goaltender, guys who are on the downsides of their careers, who have really haven't put up starting goaltender numbers.
Needless to say, though, that one of those goaltenders could be moved in the offseason.
Maybe a buyout is...
Well, if you can move Pavel Datsyuk's contract, you could probably move a goaltender who's actually playing.
Fair enough. I guess I can listen to that argument. If you know, for a team that needs to reach the salary cap floor,
or Drew, you have to use your buyout.
Yeah, that might be it. I mean, I wonder if Jim Nill is regretting not using the buyout when he had the opportunity, and then maybe, you know, you take a little bit of the hit, and then you go out and you try and acquire a Ben Bishop, or you try and acquire a Marc-Andre Fleury.
It's also possible that they make a trade in season.
Yeah.
Right.
Look, everything's possible. There's no. It just.
And we know that Jim Nill is not afraid to make trades.
That's how he got. That's how he got Jason Spezza, and that's how he got Tyler Seguin. So you know, both of those moves certainly have worked out for the Dallas Stars.
You know, just quickly back to Jamie Benn. I think the best is yet to come with Jamie Benn. I think he has a 100-point season in him, and I do believe that when you're talking about Benn and Seguin, it's just a matter of time before these guys win the Stanley Cup. I really do.
Second in the league in points last season, third in goals. No doubt that was part of the reason why Jamie Benn gets the max 8-year deal, $9.5 million per season from the Dallas Stars. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some more signings throughout the NHL. Jaden Schwartz gets a big contract from the St. Louis Blues, and Victor Rask gets a big contract from the Carolina Hurricanes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more coming up next here on TSN 1290.
Girardi, Rask goes across, Lindholm, a turn back for Falk, his shot, a score! Victor Rask on the spot! Power play goal, and Carolina has a 4-3 lead.
Victor Rask scoring for the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm willing to bet most people aren't tremendously familiar with Mr. Victor Rask of the Hurricanes. Signs a 6-year, $24 million contract extension earlier this week. I think a lot of people saw that contract and said, who?
No relation to Tuca.
No relation to Tuca, but Victor Rask, who was a former second-round pick of the Hurricanes back in 2011, certainly broken out last season. He had 48 points in 80 games in his second full season in the NHL. Sort of a young up-and-coming player on a team that has a lot of young up-and-coming players, more so on the back end, but Victor Rask certainly is one of the key components offensively for that young Hurricanes team.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, Victor Rask is not a guy, Drew, that's a household name at this point. Last year was his breakout season, getting his first 20-goal season. But, you know, he was a big part of a very surprising Hurricanes team last year. Most people expected the Hurricanes to be either last, second last, third last. But they were actually fairly close to a playoff spot for much of the season.
Sure.
And sure, you traded Eric Staal before the trade deadline, and this is a rebuilding team. But, you know, you mentioned where this team is going, and I agree with you, especially on the back end when you consider that Noah Hanifin had his rookie year last year, and they've got Hayden Fleury coming up. Justin Falk is a good young defenseman. And this Carolina Hurricanes team went out and they traded for Teuvo Teravainen. They went out and they acquired former Jet Lee Stempniak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't going to be a playoff contender next year, Drew, but it's certainly going to be a competitive team. Bill Peters, as we know, is an excellent coach.
Yeah.
You know, back to Victor Rask, you know, he's a smaller forward. Actually, he's not as small as you'd think he is, but center.
Not a physical guy, though.
Not a physical guy. He's a skill forward, a guy that, you know, had to play a year in the AHL before coming up and playing with the Hurricanes a couple of years ago, but certainly a guy that deserves the contract that he got, a guy that you can kind of play in all types of situations, kind of similar to a Michael Frolik, different position, but needless to say, he's a guy that you can put out in the power play.
With more offensive skill, though.
Yep, he's got more offensive skill. I would agree with that. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, could be your number one center next year. It's either going to be him or Jordan Staal. And when you look at Victor Rask, you know, he's most likely going to play with either Jeff Skinner, Elias Lindholm, or maybe even Elise Stempniak there, who might play on the second line right wing. But he's a good player. And, you know, it's a good signing for the Carolina Hurricanes. I really like I like a lot what that trade did for the Carolina Hurricanes. I think the Chicago Blackhawks didn't want to throw in Teuvo Teravainen.
For the trade of acquiring Teuvo Teravainen, that was the price that the Hurricanes, the prize that the Hurricanes received in exchange for taking on Brian Bickle's loathsome contract for the next couple seasons.
Yeah, and Teuvo Teravainen's a good player. He won a Stanley Cup a couple of years ago with the Chicago Blackhawks, and he has a good chance at being a top six forward for this Carolina Hurricanes team. So they're trending in the right direction. Unfortunately, there's still that ownership situation that needs to be resolved. But when you're talking about guys like Victor Rask and Slavin on the back end and Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm, I mean, they've got a lot of good young talent. We mentioned Hayden Fleury is probably going to make the team this year.
I think their ownership, look, they're a lot like any Sun Belt team. If they play well and if they win, they're going to have good attendance. They haven't played well, and they haven't been a winner for going on much of the last decade, give or take a couple of years, and that's why the attendance is struggling. So get them back winning there in Carolina. I know that there is it might not be the largest contingent of fans in the world, but there's a hearty group of hockey fans there who want to support their Hurricanes and get them back winning, and I think they'll be successful at doing that.
Yeah, well, we know what was happening in Chicago before they started to win in the mid-2000s. The Chicago Hawks could not draw flies, and then they started to win, and now they sell out every game. So
yeah, it's exactly. Winning cures all. Moving back to the Central Division, Jaden Schwartz of the St. Louis Blues signs a five-year, $26.75 million contract. It's an average annual value of $5.35 million. Former first-round pick, it's been a bit of a slow ride to the St. Louis Blues organization for Jaden Schwartz. Last year, an injury-riddled season, but when he's healthy, if you look back two seasons ago, he had 63 points in 75 games. So this is a guy who, when he's on the ice, is a tremendous top six talent for the St. Louis Blues, the St. Louis Blues team, of course, that got all the way to the Western Conference Finals this past season.
Yeah, Jaden Schwartz is a huge part of what the St. Louis Blues are doing there, Drew, and you mentioned that he's had some injury problems here, but this is a guy that you can play in a variety of situations. He's a tenacious forechecker. He's a guy that I think has 30-goal potential in the NHL. He's a guy that's certainly been a big part of the St. Louis Blues' regular season success over the last few years, and sure, they almost got to the Stanley Cup final this past year. You know, Jaden Schwartz wasn't as big of a part of it, but he was still good.
He still had 14 points in 20 playoff games.
No, he was good. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't say that he was...
No, he wasn't the driving force, though.
No, I mean, Robbie Fabry, David Backes, certainly Tarasenko up until the Western Conference Finals. But no, you're right. 14 points is very good, but needless to say, I'm a big fan of Jaden Schwartz, by the way.
Sure.
Richie and I actually watched him a couple times play for Colorado College versus UND, and he was a really good NCAA player. Fast guy. And again, like the St. Louis Blues are a team right now where they've gone through a bit of turnover, and Kevin Shattenkirk's a guy that can still get moved here. But this is a team, again, we wouldn't be surprised if they won the Central Division this year, and there hasn't been that much turnover, but it's certainly a team that, again, is going to hope that Jake Allen is the goaltender that can get them to the promised land, but it remains to be seen. He's not established.
No, he's yet to fully establish himself, but it certainly wouldn't be a surprise in the least bit if the St. Louis Blues were up atop the Central Division and made a long playoff run again on the heels of last year's.
And we knew, by the way, Drew, that this wasn't going to go to arbitration. I mean, the Blues, you know, Ken Hitchcock, Doug Armstrong are big fans of Jaden Schwartz.
Sure.
We knew that he was going to get signed to a multi-year extension. He's a guy that's done everything right. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, he's a big part of this young core.
And, you know, 5 years from now when this contract expires, if he develops and continues to develop as we would expect, he might be in line for another significant payday. So he sort of took a different route than Mark Scheifele did. Scheifele, of course, signing until he's going to be 31 years old. Jaden Schwartz going to hit free agency again at the age of 29, could be in line for another big payday. Scheifele, obviously, you would expect to get paid again when he's 31, but it's never going to be as significant as if you're 29 years old. Moving to, let's stay with the the Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. Justin Schultz came over from the Edmonton Oilers in a trade deadline deal after having a rocky stint with the Oilers. He found a good home in Pittsburgh, and he re-signs a one-year, $1.4 million contract to be on the Penguins' back end. Sort of another prove-it-to-me contract for Justin Schwartz, but seems like he has a good fit there with the way the Penguins play that up-tempo speed style. He fits in with that.
Justin Schwartz or Justin Schultz?
Schultz. Did I say Schwartz?
Well, we just talked about Jaden Schwartz.
Right,
so
there you go. Schwartz, Schultz. Yeah, it's a mouthful.
Yeah, I feel like some Schwartz's deli in Montreal right now.
There you go. We'll get you some smoked meat later.
Justin Schultz took a bit of a pay cut here, Drew, from his last contract. $2 million less than his previous contract. But if you remember back to the Stanley Cup playoffs, Justin Schultz picks up a Stanley Cup, but he wasn't playing much.
Mm-hmm.
And then Trevor Daley went down with that injury, and he became a third-pairing defenseman for this team and did a pretty good job. I think it's become very evident here, and Mike Sullivan, I think, used Justin Schultz very well, playing him 10 to 14 minutes a game.
Yep.
Justin Schultz, when he was asked to be a top-four defenseman for the Edmonton Oilers, was unable to do it, and he came in with a lot of fanfare. I think at the time we said that, you know, it was unbelievable how much hype was surrounding
the
Justin
Oilers,
Schultz.
The Oilers killed him before he even had a chance to establish himself, because he was a college free agent, an unsigned college free agent, and I think he was drafted, if I recall correctly, by Anaheim, chose not to sign with Anaheim, became a free agent, could go anywhere in the NHL, and they were using Wayne Gretzky to recruit him. The Oilers were, it was overkill what the Oilers put poor Justin Schultz through.
Well, he's a good defenseman, Drew. He can move the puck. He can play on the power play. You know, he's got decent playmaking ability, a decent shot. He's just not a top four defenseman. He's not physical enough. So for this Pittsburgh Penguins team, who has other defensemen that they can play in front of him, I like that signing. It's 1 year, and we've always said, you know, there's nothing wrong with a one-year contract, but Schultz certainly proved in the playoffs that he can play in this league still.
One last signing before we have to head to break and bring in Mike Hajka. I want to make note, Arizona Coyotes re-sign Shane Doan. He's going to sign up for another year to be with the Jets/Coyotes organization. It's a one-year, $3.876 million contract. He actually has deferred some amount of money till later on in his life. Doan, 39 years old, has only played that with the entirety of his career with that one organization. Nice to see Shane Doan after a very good year, 28 goals last year. Number of guys who get 28 goals in the NHL is few and far between. Nice to see Shane Doan come back for another season at the ripe old age of 40.
Yeah, not many guys play their entire careers anymore with one team, Drew, and especially guys that have played for over 20 years like Shane Doan has, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed just like yesterday that Shane Doan was breaking into the league with the Winnipeg Jets in 1996. But as you mentioned, the guy is still putting the puck in the net.
Sure.
And it's incredible. It's not like he's going out there and he's not contributing when he's on the ice. So, yeah, Shane Doan is not a top six forward anymore, but I'll take Shane Doan at 39 years old on my third line any day of the week. He could even play on the
power
second
play.
Line, first line if you need him to. He's a leader of this team, and I wouldn't be surprised if after Shane Doan's playing career is over, he goes right into a management role with the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, he is the face of this franchise. He has been since they moved there from Winnipeg.
Sure.
So good for him.
And there's worse mentors for Max Domi, Dylan Strome, and Anthony Duclair to have than Shane Doan, a bona fide
professional.
He's
a class act.
It certainly is. Let's head to break. When we come back, Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News joins us. We'll talk about the Jamie Benn contract. We'll talk about the Stars offseason in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning, the 16th of July. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg are with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike Hajka. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Your timing is impeccable, Drew.
Isn't it? You know, I was saying that about 20 minutes ago. I was saying that to Ezra that we had scheduled to have you on a couple days ago. We were going to talk about the Dan Hamhuis signing. We're going to talk about the Stars' goaltending situation, and we certainly still will talk about that. But then late last night, about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I'm sitting at home and I'm flipping through Twitter, and I come across your feed that says the Dallas Stars have signed Jamie Benn to a huge 8-year, $76 million contract, salary cap hit of $9.5 million per season. You know, Mike, regarding this contract, you know, when Jamie Benn, you know, top two in points this past year, top three in goals in the NHL, more than a point a game for Jamie Benn, this is just sort of the contract that a player of that ilk gets, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the timing's been perfect for him as well. I mean, the numbers that you stated, I mean, 255 points over the last 3 years is second only to Sidney Crosby. And I think, you know, people see him as an underrated player or whatever. I don't think he's that anymore. He won a gold medal in the Olympics. He hasn't done it in the playoffs yet. But this is a guy who's about to turn 27, who for the last 3 years has been one of the top scorers in the league and seems to be getting even better. So this is what players like this make. I think the only real debate you can have is, could he have taken $1 million less like Stamkos did because of the tax situation here in Texas and everything, but I honestly think the Stars and Jamie's agent believe that he is a better player than Steven Stamkos and he deserves more money.
Mike, you tweeted about this last night as well. Jamie Benn suffered a core muscle injury while training. Have you learned whether or not this is going to affect the World Cup or training camp coming up in a couple months?
What they said was that Jim Nill said last night, Jamie was still in Philadelphia, so he wasn't at this. They have a big party every summer, and so this was already scheduled, so they wanted to make the announcement there, even though Jamie wasn't there. But what Jim Nill said was that he had this stretching, not even a tearing, but a stretching of a core stomach muscle. It's not a sports hernia, and that after 6 weeks, the doctor said he should be good. Well, 6 weeks hits about August 26th, so that would give him about a week, I think, to be ready for Canada training camp. I think starts September 4th. I think that's right. And then the World Cup doesn't start till September 17th. So if I'm just guessing, and Jim said this last night, I think he'll be ready. I think he'll play in the World Cup. But that's just who Jamie is. I guess the question would become, is after 6 weeks, if there's still an issue, if he hasn't recovered properly, then I think, you know, then that could become something that they discuss of, okay, is it worth the risk to play in the World Cup if it would affect his regular season. But the talk from last night is that by August 26th, he should be ready to train properly. And like I said, I think he'll play. I just, that's what Jamie does. He had double hip surgery last summer and then played all 82 games last year. That's who he is.
Mike Hike is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, previously when we've had you on, I'm sure I've probably asked you about this, but you know, you look at sort of the first few years that Jamie Benn breaks into the NHL, and he's certainly productive, but he's productive around the 55 to 65 point mark. And then after the lockout, or the season after the lockout, pardon me, is when he really takes that next step and he goes to being almost a point a game player. You know, if looking back, do you think was there anything in particular that changed in Jamie Benn's game that elevated him to that upper echelon of NHL talent? Or is this just a guy who was sort of a bit of a late bloomer, obviously wasn't a highly sought-after prospect given the Stars drafted him in the fifth round? Is it just a guy who just generally takes maybe a little while longer to get his feet under him?
It's funny. As I'm listening to your question, I'm going through my head going like, you know, this is really kind of cool for him. Joe Nieuwendyk wanted him to be a center. And so he comes in as a left wing in his AHL season where he went to the playoffs. He played left wing.
Sure.
And, I think he led the AHL in scoring, got Texas to the AHL finals, yeah, where they lost to Hershey.
26 points so, in 24 games in that playoff
season. Yeah, that's what he is. He is a left wing. Well, hey, they have no centers, and Joe thought Jamie has everything to be a center. So he shipped him to center for, I think, 2.5-3 years. And it was a hard transition for him. He wouldn't say it. He was doing what he wanted to do to help the team, and the team wasn't, you know, as good. And I think when Jim Nill came back in, he just said, look, this guy's a left wing. I'll go get centers. And so when he got moved back to left wing, that's when the real numbers started to pile up. And same thing, you know, he also got Tyler Seguin as his center, which I think, you know, every good scorer has somebody to help him. And I think that was a big step forward for Jamie. So it's a little bit of everything. I don't think there was just a moment where we're suddenly going like, whoa, Jamie Benn is a great player now. Because he came through
Victoria,
Kelowna.
Kelowna and Victoria, yeah.
Yeah, and when he came through Kelowna, I think he was one of the best players in junior hockey at the time. And then his rookie year, he was one of the best players in the AHL playoffs at the time. And then he, you know, he had his dip in, you know, trying to adjust to the NHL. But I think it was almost more adjusting to the center position. And then when he, you know, finally got moved back to left wing full time, that's when the numbers really started coming.
Mike, getting away from Jamie Benn for a second here and going to the big free agent acquisition that the Dallas Stars made, and that's, of course, Dan Hamhuis, defenseman. They signed a couple of weeks ago. We know that the Dallas Stars aren't going to have Alex Goligoski next year. We know that they're not going to have Jason Demers next year. We know that Chris Russell is still an unrestricted free agent. He's not coming back. Dan Hamhuis, signing Dan Hamhuis, qualifying Jamie Oleksiak. Have the Dallas Stars done enough, in your opinion, to solidify this defense?
It's in my opinion, I think they're going to be better. But it is a great question. It's a question of, do you trust these kids? And the kids are Esa Lindell and Steven Johns. And in my opinion, and we were talking at the party thing last night, and so him has been a really interesting topic, and he's going to be 34. Mm-hmm. There are some people who thought he didn't play particularly well last year. I think he played pretty good on a poor team after a serious injury. So I still think he has it. Some people are worried about it. But I believe that the plan is Hamhuis will come in, potentially play 22, 23 minutes a game next to John Klingberg, with the thought process that they want Esa Lindell to knock him off that spot. And Esa Lindell is a 6'3", 215-pound defenseman who skates well. He played really well for Team Finland in the World Championships. He's already been selected to play for Team Finland in the World Cup. So there is this belief that he can be that guy. He can be John Klingberg's partner for the next 8 or 10 years. And it's a process of, when will he be ready for it? And I think, as much as, you know, everybody loves Dan Hamhuis, I believe everybody believes that he can be a great contributor to the team, I think he's a guy there who's going to hold that spot until Esa Lindell knocks him out of it and becomes the 22, 23-minute defenseman that plays next to John Klingberg. So the big question is, yes, I think they can be better. I think they might not be as good in October, November, December. The thought process is that by March, April, May, they will be a much better defense. They'll be much bigger. They'll be much stronger. They'll be able to defend better in front of the net. The question is, will they be able to, you know, move the puck and not make mistakes, because they're young defensemen?
Mike Hajek is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Dallas Stars, talking about their offseason. Mike, a lot of talk, of course, you know, as you mentioned, the Dan Hamhuis signing. You look behind the defenses, the goaltending there, and both Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi had their struggles, let's say, come playoff time. A lot of talk that Dallas might be in the market for one of the bigger name goaltenders rumored to be on the trade block, Ben Bishop, Marc-Andre Fleury. Can Jim Neal acquire another goaltender and have three goaltenders being paid over $4.5 million, or is another goaltending acquisition mean the end for one of Lehtinen or Niemi?
I think it has to be the end for one of those two. I think you have to find a way to make that work, whether that's trading directly to the other team or finding another outlet. It's funny, because I've kicked this around in my head a bunch. It does make sense that a team who, you know, if indeed a Tampa, you know, wants to get rid of Ben Bishop, that they'll need a suitable backup. Mm-hmm. And if it's Antti Niemi at 2.25 or Kari Lehtinen at, 2.89 or something like that, you know, that's not a bad deal for the other team. You know, they have a year left after this season, so that would be a little bit of a complication. Like, you're taking on, you know, 2 years of salary instead of just one. But if you have to expose a goalie, in the expansion draft, oh, there you go. You know, you've got, you know, like I said, if you were to get onto Miami, these aren't terrible goalies. You know, Kari just had, you know, one really bad game in the playoffs, and then his numbers in the regular season were, you know, middle of the road. So these aren't horrible goalies. You'd be taking on a good veteran NHL goalie who would be a backup to Vasilevsky. And then, you know, you also have a goalie to expose in the expansion draft. So it makes sense that a Tampa would want something back in return, you know, and then also get one of the Stars' top prospects and maybe a draft pick or whatever it would take to pull off the deal.
As long as
from the Stars' point of view, the real interesting thing about all this stuff is that Ben Bishop wants $7 million a year for 7 years. So now you're talking about, okay, are you ready to jump off that cliff with Ben Bishop, who might be injury prone?
Yeah, Mike, Valeri Nichushkin's a guy that we've talked to you a lot about over the last 2 or 3 years. He came into the NHL and had a great rookie season, and he's struggled ever since, even though he started to play a little bit better towards the end of the regular season, certainly struggled in the playoffs. He's an RFA, and he hasn't signed yet. What's the latest update on Valeri Nichushkin?
I think he wants a little bit more money. I don't think he's going to go back to Russia or anything. I know that's an option that, you know, you can use that. I think in talking to his agent, Val did an interview, I think, with the Russian sports people and made some comments that, hey, you know, he wouldn't mind going back to Russia. And this was back in March, I think, or maybe even February. And, you know, got on the phone to Mark Gandler's agent. And Mark Gandler was very clear, no, he likes it here. He wants to be here. So, you know, while that's always, you know, something you use in a negotiating tool, I think what it comes down to is, you know, he believes that he is a very talented player and so that he should be paid like one, but his numbers say he hasn't done it yet. So then, you know, how do you find that middle ground? So I think they're just in the middle of a negotiation. I think it would be a 1 year deal. It might be 1.5. He might want 2. You know, I think that's what they're talking about right now, just because I don't think he's, you know, done enough to even earn a $2 million contract. His numbers just aren't there yet. And so, you know, the Stars would say, hey, Kate, go out, have a great year and earn more money. And Mark and Val might be just saying, look, I'm 10th overall pick. It's time to give me a little bit more. And so I think that's what it is. If I were them, I would get a 1 year deal. I would, you know, I think he has arbitration rights next year. I'd go in and try and, you know, get 50 points, 60 points and, either take that to arbitration or try and get a longer deal with the Stars. But I think it'll get done. I don't think that he wants to go back to Russia. I think he wants to stay here and just, you know, make a little bit more than his qualifying offer.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, we know at the playoffs last year that the Stars, you know, they advanced to where they got even without Tyler Seguin in the lineup. You know, with Ben sort of getting the headlines with the big contract, you know, Seguin and Spezza, they're sort of out of the spotlight a little bit this offseason. Are these two guys who are now, you know, Seguin obviously with the disappointment of not being able to be, a valuable contributor to the team during the playoff run, and Jason Spezza sort of just in that second line center role there, not in the spotlight like he was in Ottawa. Are these two guys who are just sort of enjoying their time away from the limelight and letting Jamie Benn sort of revel in the big contract and getting extra motivated for the upcoming season?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Seguin is interesting because he has a marketing department and all that. I mean, like, he's churning out hats and shirts, and he's going to, you know, make money on the Tyler Seguin brand.
Sure.
So I don't think he ever, you know, worries about his image as far as, you know, am I getting enough? Am I doing enough? The two setbacks were fluky injuries. He got low-bridged on a knee hit, and then he, you know, got cut in the back of the Achilles. So, you know, those are the things he looks at as, it's not under my control to have a bad playoff. So, you know, I wasn't even there. So then, you know, then I think he's excited about it. The other thing I think that's interesting about him is my guess is Canada uses him as a right wing in the World Cup. And the Stars, when Seguin was out, were playing Cody Eakin as the number one center, and it actually worked pretty well in the playoffs and down the stretch. And so I think there's a real chance Tyler Seguin might come back next year. If he plays well in the right wing in the World Cup, he might be the right wing with Eakin and Jamie Benn and see how that line fits together. And I honestly think, just like Benn on the left wing, Seguin might actually be a better, you know, goal scorer, point producer on the right wing. So that's an interesting thing to watch there, and I think he'll be fine. I think all his health issues, you know, he'll fight through those. Spezza, I think, is just happy to be where he's at. It was hard for him in Ottawa, and I think he loved it there, but it just the pressure got to him. And, you know, he is a very determined, driven guy, and he doesn't mind doing that in a secondary position here. I think his second year was much better than his first. I think his third year will be even better than that. He's a smart guy. I think he's got all the tools. I think he's got good people around him. So I think he'll be fine. He's found a place. He's found a place where I think he's going to play the rest of his career, and he's happy about that. And he believes it'll be a good team for the rest of his career. So that's all he wants. He wants to play on a team that wins hockey games.
Offensively, they are one of the class in the top of the class in the NHL. The question for the Stars is on the back end and in goal. We'll see how it shapes out throughout the rest of the off season. Mike Hajka joins us from the Dallas Morning News to discuss the Stars. Mike, really appreciate your time this morning.
It's always fun. Call anytime.
We will, Mike. Take care. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, the Las Vegas franchise has a general manager. They don't yet have a nickname, but that's coming soon, too. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
I like teams that have talent and can score goals and are fun to watch. I don't think hockey should ever be boring. I don't like sit-back hockey, stand-still hockey. I like the people attack and make things happen and make plays and score goals. And it's what I did in Washington for a number of years. We had some terrific teams. Haven't won a cup yet, but might win one this year. Might win one next year.
That is the general manager of the new Las Vegas NHL franchise, George McPhee, GM, as you will. He, of course, introduced as the inaugural general manager of that franchise. They still don't have a last name. Supposedly, maybe it's going to be Knights or Black Knights or something along those lines, but yet to be announced. But they did announce George McPhee as the inaugural general manager. McPhee, of course, last was the general manager for the Washington Capitals for a number of years. He was responsible, I guess, for the teardown of the franchise, of the Capitals franchise, that allowed them to eventually draft Alex Ovechkin first overall back in what year was Ovechkin drafted, Ezzy?
2004.
There you go. That's why I got you here. I can never remember the actual years, but you have this savant-like capability to remember the details of that nature.
Ovechkin 1, Malkin 2.
I remember that part. I knew that part, but I couldn't remember exactly the year it happened.
And then he played in the same rookie year as Sidney Crosby because there was a lockout that year.
There was a lockout that year. I remember that. That was always disappointing.
That was probably one of the worst years in Canadian history. Well, there was a lot of poker being watched on TV.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day, that was just awful.
Yeah.
Because the World Cup took place in September of 2004, and then we knew the lockout was coming.
That's right. I mean, the World Cup ended, I think, about 12 hours before the lockout began, right? Was that Canada beating Finland? Was that who it was? Okay.
Yeah, Mario Lemieux, Marty Brodeur.
Yeah, but it was sort of the lockout was sort of a pall over the entire tournament back then, because everybody knew that it would look like it was going to be a long time until we saw hockey again, and it was. So 12 months later is when we saw hockey.
Hopefully that never happens again.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't, but I have no confidence of that being the case because, well, anytime the NHL owners have had an opportunity to lock out the players, they certainly have taken that opportunity to try and squeeze a few extra dollars out of the players, no matter the damage it does to the brand and no matter the damage it does to the league. I guess the owners would say, well, the fans keep coming back, and really the evidence is that they do keep coming back.
Drew, can we just not
say we'll the save word? That for 2020.
Let's just not say the word lockout if we don't have to.
Well, 4 years.
I hate that word.
4 years from now, we might have to say it a little more often, but for now, on July the 16th, we don't have to talk about it. We can talk about George McPhee getting hired as the inaugural general manager of the Las Vegas franchise. Your thoughts? Is this the good hire? We had heard McPhee's name bandied about as one of the top contenders from the start. Any surprise that he got the job? You think that this is a smart hire to steer the ship of the Las Vegas franchise?
Yeah, Drew, I don't think anybody with any knowledge of George McPhee could say this wasn't a smart hockey hire. You mentioned it. George McPhee was with the Washington Capitals organization for 16 years, and you know, people forget how responsible he has been for building this team up. And sure, you know, he's not there anymore, but he was certainly there at the beginning when they started to build their team around Alexander Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom and players like that. But before that, he had the experience with the Vancouver Canucks. He's been under Garth Snow with the New York Islanders the last couple of years here.
As an advisor, whatever that means. He's worked for the NHL front office before.
Right. Well, certainly advisor, you know, he's in an assistant general manager type of role, Drew. Needless to say, he's been in the hockey world for many years now. And yeah, there were other candidates. You heard that there might be some younger candidates like a Jason Botterill, for example. But, you know, when you're talking about this Las Vegas franchise, and we'll talk to Steve Karp coming up here in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about this Las Vegas franchise, I think they wanted an established general manager that has experience building teams, drafting and developing, and has the previous relationships with general managers. And that's not to say that a guy like Jason Botterill, of course, good Winnipeg boy, not to say that he doesn't have the relationships, because I think there's a good chance Jason Botterill is going to be the next GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins after Jim Rutherford, if not another team. I mean, very bright hockey mind. He's a good hockey player, too. But when you're talking about George McPhee, he's just done it for so many years. And he's been working with Islanders, and you got to think he was very influential in getting guys like Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk over there, right? Because he was working with Garth Snow.
Well, and his draft record with the Capitals is, to some extent, quite a success. You mentioned Ovechkin, and of course, Nicklas Backstrom was a top five pick as well.
Or you would have drafted Alexander Ovechkin exactly. Drew, and the scouts have a lot to do with that.
Sure.
But needless to say, he was with the Washington Capitals for that long, and they had a lot of success. Dating back before that, the Washington Capitals were a successful team. They never won the Stanley Cup, but it was a team that was always built the right way, and it was usually built around skill.
He took over as general manager of the Capitals right after they were swept by the Red Wings in the 1997 Stanley Cup final. So that's when he became general manager. Now, the franchise suffered through a downturn at that point in time, and they had to be really torn down until they were able to get Ovechkin back in 2004. But you look at Ovechkin, you look at Backstrom, and I mean, those guys are relatively easy to draft. But you look at a guy like Evgeny Kuznetsov, who he drafted way back in 2010, only recently coming over to the NHL. But, you know, that's obviously turned out to be a very good draft pick. Marcus Johansson has turned out to be a good draft pick. I mean, jury's still a little bit out on a guy like Andre Burakovsky, but it seems like he's going to be a player in the NHL.
Yeah, you're focusing on the draft picks, though. I mean, the draft picks have a lot to do with the amateur scouts, Drew. Needless to say, George McPhee is overseeing that. And it's about how you develop those draft picks, right?
If I look at the trades, he's also responsible for the guy for trading Philip Forsberg for Martin Irat, which is going to go down as one of the worst trades in recent NHL history. I mean, that was a trade where he was a desperate general manager. Forsberg, of course, a top 10 pick for the Capitals, and he gets dealt for Martin Irat. We know Forsberg's turned out to be a fantastic player for the Predators, just signing a 6-year, $36 million contract. So, I mean, you can't talk about George McPhee's record without mentioning that black mark on his record.
Any GM in the NHL is going to have trades like that. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff signed Olli Jokinen. That wasn't a good signing, right?
Sure.
So you could pick apart any general manager in the NHL, Drew. I mean, Lou Lamoriello is regarded as one of the best general managers in the NHL. Ryan Clough, Vladimir Malikov, those were horrible contracts at the time, right? He threw a lot of money at those guys. Mm-hmm. So every general manager is going to have bad moves. But needless to say, George McPhee is a very well-respected general manager in the NHL, and, mm-hmm. and I do believe that he is the right guy for this franchise. It concerns me a little bit when they start talking about winning now. I mean, this Las Vegas team isn't even going to be in the NHL for another year, and they're already talking about winning. I mean, they should focus on developing players and slowly building a good team.
Well,
that's just me.
But they are going to be in a better position to win sooner than any other NHL expansion team because the rules are set up to benefit them. They're going to get some. Look,
going to be getting Alexander Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby.
Not, they're not. And but they're going to get a top five pick, or they have the possibility of getting a top five pick. I mean, that's what the rules were in the for the lottery.
I wouldn't expect the Las Vegas team to make the playoffs in the first two or three years, well, if you are.
I wouldn't expect them to make them in the first year, but I think that it wouldn't be unreasonable for the second or third year, given the quality. I mean, they're
going no idea who's going to be on the team.
I don't have any idea.
So what are you basing that on?
I'm basing that on the fact that I know that the protection rules throughout the league are so difficult for the other teams that they are going to get some quality, and they're going to get a top five draft pick. And I mean, a top five draft pick, we talked about it with this Jets team. A top five draft pick can very well change the outlook of a franchise.
Getting quality players and a top five draft pick by no means
it doesn't guarantee
gives
anything,
you a good chance of making
the playoffs.
But it gives
you, I mean, it gives you a leg up. They are better suited. I'm not saying they're going to win. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they're guaranteed anything, but they are in a better position to be successful sooner than almost any other NHL expansion franchise ever has been.
Sure, but I still don't think that means that there's a good chance they make the playoffs. And when you start talking about winning and all that, I just think it's a little premature. That's all I'm saying.
Completely entitled to your opinion.
You don't want to get your fans' hopes up too high that they're going to be in the playoffs the first year or the second year when there's a good chance that doesn't happen.
Well, let's just hope they have fans there in Las Vegas. Let's go to break. We'll bring back in Steve Karp from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We'll talk about the hiring of McPhee. We'll talk about how the franchise is being received now that it is official in Las Vegas. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's 10:30 in the morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Steve Karp from the Las Vegas Review Journal is going to join us momentarily to talk about the hiring of George McPhee and talking about the Las Vegas NHL franchise.
I like last segment. We were getting a little fired up. Just because it's mid-July here, Drew, doesn't mean we can get into our regular, you know, regular season form. We can go at it.
Well, I think
drop the gloves.
I don't know that we dropped the gloves per se, but I think we certainly had a reasonable disagreement between friends, colleagues, acquaintances.
I don't know why
associates.
You know, it's very hurtful that you don't consider us friends. I got to say.
You know, I'm just kidding. You know that I love you.
Even though I did invite you for a birthday round of golf next Saturday, and you declined.
I did decline because I do have parenting responsibilities, but I did say that I will be glad to join you post-round. You mentioned going out for some beverages that evening, and I'd be glad to join you for those beverages later on in the evening. But
I just thought, you know, you might want to come out for a round of golf.
Again,
we golfed a couple of weeks ago at Bell Acres.
It was lovely. Again,
no, that was only a week ago.
Yes, I would love to be able to, but, you know, there are the parenting responsibilities that come with having a 10-month-old, and it wouldn't probably go over very well, and I wouldn't even want to ask Laura to say, you know, to put her in a position to say no when I say, honey, I'm going to go do the show for 2 hours and then I'm going to go golfing and I've worked all week, and so say hi to the kid for me and good luck with all that.
You know what? Maybe I'll invite Laura to come golf and
you
then
should.
You can stay with Aaron
exactly.
At home.
Exactly. That's exactly what you should do. Either invite Laura or invite Aaron to go golfing. And
I know Laura golfs, by the way.
Laura's a tremendous golfer.
Yep.
So you should do that.
Bit of a slice, if I'm not mistaken.
No, you are mistaken.
No, you have a slice.
Oh, I have a slice. Yeah, well, a slice of bread. Yeah, exactly. We're in the same exact boat there. I think we're getting Steve up on the line. No, we're having some troubles getting Steve on the line, so we'll keep working at that.
Maybe Steve's having breakfast. It's a little earlier in Vegas.
It is. I spoke to Steve. He said he was ready to go. Maybe I got the wrong number there, so I'll write that down. Anyways, as I was saying, you know, we're talking about some available free agents and about George McPhee as the general manager of the Las Vegas franchise.
Well, on the topic of Las Vegas here, and hopefully we're going to get Steve Karp on the line. We've had him on the show before. Good guy. You got to think that now the focus, Drew, is going to be head coach, getting your coaching staff in place. And I would say even before that, getting your amateur scouts
sure.
in place. And we'll ask Steve about that. But, you know, this is only the first step. And you think the Las Vegas team has a year before they join the NHL. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done. You got to think they're already going to be putting together mock expansion drafts, Drew, because the Las Vegas team is not going to know until late in the season next year
mm-hmm.
who is available to them, right? So they mm-hmm. can – the amateur scouting staff is going to be able to put together their list and – that's not going to be affected by anything. But when you're talking about every single team in the NHL, all 30 teams protecting their players and exposing players, they're not going to know that. So you're still going to have to make your own projections. But there's a lot of staff that needs to be hired here under George McPhee, and we'll have to wait and see There's going to be no shortage of coaches that are going to want, be wanting that job. But certainly, you know, back to what we were talking about last segment, I think George McPhee is a smart hire. You could say it's a safe hire, but certainly a smart hire. And, you know, as we talked about, there were certainly no shortage of candidates for that job. But when you look at George McPhee's track record with Washington and recently the New York Islanders, you certainly can't question Bill Foley hiring McPhee.
No, you cannot. I mean, he does have that track record. I mean, you look at a guy who's, you know, he's been an NHL lifer. And when you're sort of starting out with a blank slate, you want to hire an NHL lifer. I have no doubts whatsoever that Gary Bettman, you know, was to some extent consulted about this hire, and he put in a good word for George McPhee. That's how these things work.
He's a very well-regarded guy in the NHL, Drew. I know that.
Sure.
And again, you know, just because certain other younger candidates didn't get the job didn't mean that they were qualified. But when you're talking about George McPhee, he's got a great resume.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Steve Karp from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Steve, good morning. My apologies. I had the wrong number. I had the wrong area code as we were trying to call you.
Oh, no worries. Good to be with you guys.
Yes, good to have you on, Steve. As we were talking about, of course, the hiring of George McPhee as the general manager of the new Las Vegas franchise, you know, from your perspective, and obviously, you know, to some extent, you've obviously been covering the entire process from start to finish. You know, were you the least bit surprised about George McPhee's announcement as the new general manager? You think this is the right guy to steer the inaugural ship of the Las Vegas franchise?
I was not surprised. I was actually pleased that Bill Foley got this one right. He was on my short list, along with Dale Talon and Norm McIver and Don Maloney. So I thought Bill Foley scored on this one. He didn't air mail it over the crossbar. So props to him. They're getting a real solid hockey guy who I think is very motivated to get back in the GM's chair and do a good job.
Steve, are you aware how many candidates Bill Foley interviewed for the GM job? And do you know how close another candidate was? Or was it always George McPhee that was, you know, head and shoulders above the rest of the candidates?
He told me he interviewed seven people. Three were finalists. And I believe Don Maloney was among those who were given a second interview, but George McPhee and he seemed to hit it off right away. And when they met face-to-face in Montana, Foley knew that was his guy. They just seemed to be in sync on a lot of things, on philosophy, on attitude. And it just seems like Bill's very comfortable with George running his hockey operation for him.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, talking about the hiring of George McPhee as general manager of the franchise. Steve, you mentioned it. It's sort of awkward here, as you know, we're trying to do the show, and normally, you know, I have a nickname that I can call for every other team in the NHL, and yet can't say anything yet about that Las Vegas franchise. You wrote about this in the Review-Journal yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. You know, Bill Foley's getting more frustrated over the lack of a name for this team.
He is, because with every day he doesn't have a nickname and a logo, a day goes by that he's missing out on sales of merchandise. And as you know, that is a very important revenue stream for any sports team, much less a brand new franchise in a city that's ever had major league sports. So, yeah, he's getting frustrated, all right, because he didn't realize the legal ramifications that come with putting a name, a trademark, a copyright together. And so he is up to his neck in lawyers. They're trying to work with the league and work with Adidas, which owns Reebok, which is the official supplier of uniforms for the NHL. And they're trying to come to some sort of agreement on what to call the team, how to design the uniform, what the color scheme should be. You know, remember that originally he wanted to be called the Black Knights, which is Army's nickname for its sports teams at West Point, where Foley went to college. But unfortunately, if you have to deal with the U.S. government on that, and I don't think anybody in their right mind wants to do business with the government right now. So I think Black Knights are out. Maybe Knights. Of course, you have the London Knights up in Ontario, the junior team, so they may have to call Dale Hunter and see if they can work a deal out with Dale and to be able to use the name Knights. So I don't know if Canadian copyright law is different from American copyright law. I'm imagining it is. So that may complicate things a bit also if he just wants to go with the name Knights. Which is, you know, a fine name. It doesn't invoke anything fancy necessarily other than the medieval show with the Excalibur that they have. But other than that, you know, it's a name most of us can live with.
Is there a clubhouse favorite among the fans for what the team name should be or team name they would like to see?
Yeah, you know, most of them want gambling connotations like aces or gamblers or blackjacks, stuff like that. And the NHL has advised Bill to steer clear of gambling references for his team name. So, you know, when you put it in the story and people see it, they don't seem to give a damn. They're going to say, hey, it should be aces, it should be blackjacks, it should be, you know, roulette wheels, it should be whatever.
Jackpots, you know, whatever
they,
it is.
They, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you have fun with it. We've been running kind of an informal, like, bracket, like you see the NCAA tournament, and I think our final four are Scorpions, Knights, Aces, and I think Wranglers was the other one. You know, we had a ACHL team named the Wranglers sure. A few years ago. And so, you know what, if they called them the Wranglers, you know, I'd be okay with that. If they called them the Thunder, I'd be okay with that. The former IHL team we had in Vegas, it would be paying homage to our hockey history with that. But, you know, I think Bill wants something that, as I wrote in the article, that's aggressive, fierce, will represent what the team on the ice will be. And so I think he's looking more along militaristic lines, being a West Point guy.
Maybe they want to honor their CFL history and call themselves the Posse.
You know, it's funny. Someone emailed me with that very name saying, hey, you know, the Posse, we've had the Posse before. And so I responded, yeah, we also had this one and that one and a few other teams that are in the graveyard here in Vegas sports. So, you know, I remember the Posse well, and
for better or worse,
fun season. Oh, it was fun. It was fun. It was, you know, look, the only problem is it's 120 degrees on the field.
Sure.
At the Silver Bowl when they were playing, and it's a little warm for anybody, frankly. So, you know, the idea of venturing into the States by the CFL, while well intended, didn't, you know, work out from an execution standpoint.
Steve, getting back to George McPhee, now that McPhee has been named the new general manager of the Las Vegas hockey team, what are the next steps for George McPhee? Is he going to be focusing on hiring an amateur scouting staff? Is it going to be searching for a head coach? What's the rest of the summer and the early fall looking like for George McPhee?
George's first priority is to get a scouting staff put together and get him out on the road as soon as possible because in a few weeks, we've got junior tournaments in Europe, and training camps are going to be opening up for the junior teams, and practice is going to begin for the U.S. colleges. And, of course, we have the World Cup in Toronto. So he wants to have people and eyes watching these kids playing throughout the world. And so I know he's been besieged, and I'm telling you guys, there have literally been hundreds of people who have been sending and calling and emailing resumes who want in on this venture. They want to be part of it. So George, I would think, has got a pretty good idea of who he wants to hire. He didn't divulge any names to me, per se, But he's going to put together a good scouting staff. There's no question in my mind, much the way your man Kevin Shoveldayoff has done up in Winnipeg. You've got to have good scouts today. You have great players all over the world, and you better be able to identify them and then be able to see if they can fit in the way you guys play, your team plays. So that's priority one. He's also looking to hire regular office staff. He's going to need an assistant GM at some point. He's going to want to hire a capologist, an analytics guy. Just have, the group of hockey people every team has so they can start bouncing ideas off each other, start looking at, getting that expansion draft board up on the, in their office and start preparing. Because before you know it, it's going to be June. The expansion draft will be here. The entry draft will be here. Vegas will draft no lower than six. And maybe even have a shot at one. You never know.
Sure.
Busy time here. And they also have to break ground on their practice facility in Summerlin, which is in the suburbs of Vegas, about a half hour northwest of the Strip. And it's going to have two sheets of ice. It's going to have player lounge, locker rooms, coaches' offices, strength and conditioning area, sports medicine area. The team's offices will be located up on the second floor of the facility. It's 155,000 square foot building that they're planning. So they are getting ready to look to break ground in a month or so on that and get it ready for training camp in 2017.
Steve, we'll let you go on this last question. For those of us outside of Las Vegas, we sort of thought it was a foregone conclusion that the NHL was going to make the announcement when they made it. Locally in Vegas, what has been the reaction? Has there been a sort of a palpable level of excitement? Are people on board with this? Or is it, Vegas being such a sort of a, we think of it as a tourism mecca, but there certainly is a populace that lives there. What's been the reaction of the year-round Vegas populace to this announcement?
People are excited. We've seen a spike in season ticket sales since the announcement. They're over 15,400 right now, and they're getting toward the ceiling, which will be 16,000. They're playing in a 17,500 seat building at T-Mobile Arena. And, so they're essentially going to be sold out every night. And, people are excited about the George McPhee hire, at least people who know their hockey and follow the sport, and they are anxiously awaiting the name. The name is now the big thing. That's kind of from front and center. So everyone's just waiting and curious to see what the team's going to be called, and then the focus will be on who will be the coach and eventually who will be playing for this team. So there's a progression, a natural progression that's taking place. But, everything has been on the uptick since June 22nd when the team was awarded. So, we're all good. We're all, I'm certainly busy.
Sure.
But it's a good busy, so I have no problem with that. Unfortunately, I've been tracking all these UFAs that Vegas might be able to go after in 2017, and it seems like every other day a big name comes off the list. No Victor Hedman, no J.B. Benn, and, these were guys that they would have loved to have had a shot at, but, nobody's given anything away in this league to them, so they're going to have to scratch and claw their way into contention.
Well, it'll be October of 2017 before we know it, and we're excited to see the Las Vegas franchise enter into the NHL. Steve Karp covers the Las Vegas hockey scene for the Las Vegas Review Journal. Steve, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, folks. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks
Our
a lot,
pleasure,
Steve.
Steve. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment when we return here on TSN 1290. Final segment for this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. We want to thank our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. Without them, IC Radio wouldn't come to be. So big thanks to those fine sponsors of ours. At Royal Troon, the site of the Open Championship, it is a battle between Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson. Both gentlemen are at 11 under for the tournament, tied for the lead. Soren Yeldsen is three shots back. Of course, final round coverage of the Open Championship, of the British Open, as it is known on this side of the Atlantic, tomorrow morning here on TSN 1290, Golf on the Radio. It is a fantastic listen if you can't be in front of the television to catch the Open Championship. Tune in here on TSN 1290 for final round coverage.
Drew, I'm not sure how much of the British Open you've been watching, but have you seen these bunkers?
Well, that's Lynx golf. That's standard Lynx golf, as...
Like, these guys hit it into these bunkers that look like they're basically impossible. Like, I would take at least five shots to get out of one of these bunkers.
Well, what amateurs like yourself or myself do is often you can't go forward with your bunker shot. You have to play it sideways. I mean,
they're like 6 feet high.
Well, that's Lynx golf. That's what Lynx golf is. There's no water hazards on the course. The greens aren't particularly difficult. It's just Lynx golf. It's a completely different game from what you and I are used to watching on the PGA Tour, what you and I are used to playing, say, when we go out and hack it around at Bell Acres or whatever. It's a different style of golf. I love it. I love the Open Championship.
I do too.
I think it is. It's just such a...
My favorite is always the Masters, though.
Sure. I mean, the Masters has its appeal because it's April in Winnipeg and you're sort of shaking off the doldrums of a winter, and it's the first sign to me that that spring is really on its way and warm weather is on its way.
It's the first major.
Yeah, it's the first major. Everything else, the Open Championship, it just looks so much different. It looks so different compared to all the other golf tournaments you watch week in and week out. And you know, golf is a British thing. It's a Scottish thing. So when they're at Royal Troon, or they're at St. Andrews, or they're at Royal Liverpool, or wherever
Carnoustie.
They are, Carnoustie, you know, all these fantastic old Lynx courses, you can feel the history of the game more than you can when they play, you know, any number of the courses they play. The U.S. Open has a lot of history, but often the PGA Championship courses are more modern courses. Whistling Straits isn't that old. Wherever they played last year, I think up in Washington, I can't remember where it was. Of course, I was at Valhalla a couple of years ago for the PGA Championship just outside of Louisville.
Are we talking about that? We're talking about the British Open.
I know, but
no one cares about that.
We're talking about the difference between, you know, the PGA Tour golf courses and the European Tour Lynx style golf courses.
I hope that Phil Mickelson wins. I've always been a big Phil Mickelson fan, lefty, as he's known.
I don't think the show's over. Alex just kicking us off air right now is what's happening there. But great, great golf coverage.
That was a great final golf segment.
Well, I like golf every now and then. It's July, as you can only, you got to talk about a little bit of golf. The Open Championship, as we were saying, tomorrow morning here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to all our guests, Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Mike Heike of the Dallas Morning News, and Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And as I mentioned, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Alex, doing a great job behind the board. For my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball later today on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Visit the new luxury auto and art gallery at Waverly and Mick.